Generating traffic and sales can be a challenge for online merchants. But selling on the Walmart Marketplace puts your products in front of millions of customers who shop on Walmart.com. And right now, sellers who join Walmart Marketplace can save up to 50% on referral and fulfillment fees for the first 90 days. So get started today. Head over to marketplace.walmart.com/savings. That's marketplace.walmart.com/savings.
Welcome to E-Commerce Conversations, a podcast by Practical E-Commerce.
What is going on, Internet? Eric Van Holtz back again with another E-Commerce Conversations. Hope all is going well on the other side of the Internet. On the other side of the table from me, Sean. What's up, man?
What's up, dude?
Third time's a charm, right?
Yeah.
Because we did a remote one last time, didn't we?
Yeah. Only three times, huh?
Yeah.
Look at that. This is going to be the best one yet.
It will be the best one yet. I think the first time you came on, you spilled the beans on how to grow. And then last time was kind of talking about, I don't even know if I'm remembering correctly, but just getting over iOS 14, kind of affiliate marketing, that kind of stuff. I don't know. Shall we talk about what a disaster 2022 was?
Yeah, there were some highs. There were some lows.
I mean, a disaster for me. I don't know about for you. You guys always seem to be crushing it.
Man, we're super lucky. No, but, you know, we just had a candid conversation off air, and I talked to a lot of brands. I probably talked to, in a given week, I probably touch base with 50 different brands, right? So maybe in a year, I'm talking to 300 or something. And that's just out of joy and love for the craft of e-commerce. But I'd say probably 50% of brands, you know, give or take 10%, were down year over year in 2022, right? Some brands, I would say there's like a cohort of 15 to 20% of brands that were down disastrously and will end up going into bankruptcy or some sort of, you know, fire sale. And, you know, then there's probably like 30% of brands who were down, but like planned on being down, profits up because of it, whatever. Then there's like some brands that grew slightly. And then there's like a very small cohort, 5, 10% of brands that just destroyed 2022. And they're like, this is the best year in e-commerce ever. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then I know the feelings of that time period. You feel like you're God's gift to entrepreneurship and e-commerce and you know everything. And then life has a way of humbling you, or I should say humbling me.
But. Right. Yeah. Hopefully I can avoid that for as long as possible by just being so paranoid. Like we were just talking about, you know, flashy levels of wealth, right? And I just think that's just asking God to cripple you or something. It's like, nah, man, you got to be like as stealth as possible to stay humble to those roots.
I think so too. I mean, I think this is kind of an interesting topic and discussion because when you find success and your bank account gets bigger, you do have that ability to spend money on essentially anything. And, you know, what does it mean when you start buying luxury cars or Gucci bags or Rolex watches, AP watches, whatever, you know, whatever that material possession is? I see the justification on both ends. Like if you can pay for it in cash, like the Lambo, and you have no mortgage on it and you've got no liabilities to it, you just enjoy it because you have that much money. What's the harm in that? But at the same time, do you have kids yet?
I do not have kids yet.
Is that on the roadmap?
Yeah, yeah. I think post 31, I'm going to try to get a couple in a row, but yeah. I got a couple of years.
So, you know, the question I also ask is like the environment your kids grow up in. Like that's not a normal thing that people's dads have, you know, $500,000 cars or $1 million cars or whatever it is.
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up in a super economically depressed area, like during the opioid epidemic. I know a lot of people who died of heroin overdoses in high school, right? So it's like a very bad area. And now like in my adult life, I have a few friends who've been super lucky to have, you know, 9-figure exits. So like they've gotten over $100 million in cash for selling their business. So looking at that spectrum, you know, I talked to one friend who has young kids, flew private and spent the summer in Europe, right? Like something unimaginable to high school me, right? And I was worried. I talked to him. I'm like, are you worried your kids are going to be assholes? And he's like, your kids are assholes if you're an asshole. So he's like, I try not to be an asshole, so I hope my kids won't be assholes. Another friend who has like a support staff of like 8 people to help raise his kids, right? And I the same conversation with him, and he's just like, he's like, dude, my whole life revolves around being there for them. And he's like, the support staff just lets me be the best version of myself to my kids. So that's one of the spectrum. The other end is like physical goods do not make you happy. And like, that is real rich kid privilege shit to say, but it's like, no, dude, like buying the cars will not make you happy. So let people enjoy things. Like if that really truly does bring you joy, fantastic. But if you don't have that joy and you think that good will get that to you, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It'll just make you feel stupid. As someone who spent a lot of money on shit, it'll just make you feel stupid.
Yeah. So don't buy for status or to fit in. Buy because you have a true passion for whatever that item is.
Yeah. There's, you know, I spent a lot of money when I proposed to my wife. I had our favorite band be there and play a private set for us. That cost a chunk of change, right? One of the best things I've ever done in my entire life. That is a real thing that like money actually was used to bring joy in my life. So our wedding, trying to plan it right now, we're planning on hiring three of our favorite bands to play like at our wedding called Sean and Sarah Fest. That's going to cost me an insane amount of money. More money than people should spend on a wedding, right? But it's like, oh, that's a good example of I think money will be able to bring joy in my life, right? But there's a house up the street from me that I wanted to rent, and they wanted to rent for $15,000. And as someone who could afford that, I was like, there's no way that any house is worth $15,000 a month. So I didn't rent it.
Yeah.
I'm staying in my $5,000 a month house. So,
well, I mean, a $5,000 a month house is a pretty nice house too.
Yeah. I got a pool.
You got a pool.
Yeah. Yeah. But the house up the street is fantastic. It's a beautiful thing of, it's a beautiful piece of like architecture. It's awesome. But like, I would just kick my own ass. Like my 14-year-old self would be like, what are you doing? And so I can't do it.
Yeah. So here's the question. Let's say you've got $100 million in the bank and you've come to the realization that money doesn't buy you happiness or whatever. What do people do with that money? It just sits there?
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, I think it's different for everybody in the situation. My goal is, I think we could sell Ridge for $1 billion in like 3 years. I think like the way I'm trying to time it is right now, e-commerce valuations are, or just brand valuations, all asset valuations are depressed, right? We're coming out of a bubble. So like you have to give it some time for that bubble to inflate again, right? And interest rates are going to go up in 2023 and then they're going to go back down in 2024. So like hopefully we're in a new bubble by 2025, 2026 and I can sell my asset, right? Do that, I'll get a fuck ton of money. The goal after that is to start another company that is in a bigger total addressable market to get that company to be $100 billion, sell that again. And it's just to try to get, one, it's to do something fun, right? I like working in businesses. I think it's fun. But to get as much money as possible, and then I'm giving it all away. I don't know. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to give any money to my kids.
Is your wife on board with that?
I think so. My wife's just like, whatever, man. We're just chilling, hanging out. Yeah. I think if you do have a ton of resources, you can like do a lot of good. And it's weird that people don't, right? But I guess if you're Jeff Bezos, like...
Well, I would argue that giving it away is not the best use of the money because I'm a strong believer that like businesses is the most charitable things that exist. A profitable, sustainable business does more good for the world than generally charity, because you're keeping people employed, you're feeding them, you're putting roofs over their heads, and you're providing products that enhance the people's lives as well. So in theory, I think Steve Jobs had like a similar mindset to it, is like our charity to the world is Apple and the value that Apple brings to the world. And I kind of fall into that camp. It's not to say like you don't help out people where need be or if you have resources to do it, but I don't think it's as efficient business model because charities are taking other people's money and spending it not how those people would spend it. So you have like slight perversions in the allocation of resources.
Right, right. And private enterprise is really great at allocating resources, right? Right. It's like it's the most efficient way to
do it. Yeah, yeah. So it's, I guess it's not to say it's necessarily bad, but it's not as efficient as something that is profitable.
Yeah. And you know, when I'm dead, I don't give a fuck what happens. Yeah, right. At the end of the day. I don't really care. Like a lot of steps in the journey before I get to the point where I have.
Yeah, you don't have $100 billion. Yeah. Well, we got to plan on it. Like, if you don't have that vision, you're not going to get there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But yeah, maybe the best thing to do is like just put all the money in a thing that just gives out business loans, right? There's a thing in Africa they did where like, yeah. It was just like, I think you just submit a business plan and there was a random number generator to figure out if you got funded or not. They were just like, and it was like just as good as if you have people evaluate the business plans or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, people are horrible at knowing what's going to work. So just like, anyway, maybe I'll do that. Figure something out. But yeah. First I got to, step one, got to sell Ridge for $1 billion. Yeah.
You don't think you could convert Ridge to that $100 billion company?
No. Yeah, I can explain why.
Yeah, do it.
You have to look at, like, what are you doing and what's the addressable market? So the most valuable single company is Hermes, right? They are worth, like, $250 billion. I don't know. It's time recording, who knows, right? Yeah. But it's the most single valuable brand. And then besides that, you get into conglomerates, right? So if you look at like LVMH, right? Keurig, right? You know, Nike, you could argue is a single brand, but they own Converse and they have like a bunch of other shit they got going on. Nike's worth like $170 billion. So just like, there's like maybe three examples of single brands worth $100 billion in a non-tech way, right? Or not automotive way or whatever. So just total addressable market, Ridge cannot be a $100 billion company, right? It's like, if I want to force it, we could build a little VF Corp, right? That's worth $30 billion, right? Then it's like, VF Corp owns North Face and Vans, two very iconic brands, not to mention Supreme and whatever else, right? I wrote a blog post and it was just like, yeah, the biggest mistake people make when they start their business happens before they start it. It's choosing what business to go into, right? It's like, I'm very open. I tell people all the time, like, my number one piece of advice is don't try to sell wallets to people. It's like, yeah, people don't care about wallets. It's like, we're the biggest wallet company. It's like, that sucks. You know what I mean? So like us pivoting the next couple of years is like, we launched rings, we launched watches, we launched knives. It's like, to us being an accessories company, right? We have a bunch of other stuff we're going to launch to get out of this wallet category because the wallet TAM is as big as we are right now. It's a very bad place to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Try men's grooming.
Yeah. Same type of thing, right?
I mean, it's a blessing and a curse because like you own the market, right? Whereas if you went into something that's far more competitive, then it can get pretty brutal, right?
Yeah, but dude, like, I mean, you're so much better off capturing 1% of a massive market than like us having to be market makers. Yeah. Right?
So what's the next industry that you would get into? Like, I assume you're not building a brand then?
You know, I think there's an epidemic in America where people don't go to the dentist. Specifically, young men don't go to the dentist. You're 41. When was the last time you went to the dentist?
Ooh, like you got me as like a month ago.
Oh, okay. Most people.
But I'm married with two kids. I'm responsible, Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not young anymore.
Yeah, true. Most people just don't go to the dentist. Like specifically post-pandemic, like if you're listening to this and you're under 35 and a man, you probably haven't been to the dentist in like 10 years. So there's a massive business to be built around just trying to get guys to go to the dentist. Because a lot of it's like, it's a horrible experience. It's like you're signing up to pay a bunch of money and be in pain and like be confused. Yeah. And like, the other thing is like,
are you going to do the Hooters for dentists?
Yeah, maybe.
Is that what you're going to do? Just like have some dental hygienists wearing some cleavage tops?
Yeah, probably nothing that sexual, but just really just trying to streamline that process. So look, I mean, that's a huge battle. There's a lot of regulation involved. The other thing is like, to the dentist listening, they'd be so mad. It's barely a science. Like so much of it's art, right? Like if you go to two different dentists, they'll give you two different treatment plans. Like, cause it's all about like what they perceive in the moment or whatever. And like, maybe there's some science around like the way the teeth and mouth work, but like the actual treatment's a lot of it's art. So yeah, dude, there's $100 billion brand to be built around dental care.
Yeah. So, I gotta connect you to one of my buddies. He runs a company called Total Men's Health here in town. He's got same thing where he just built all these clinics that are designed specifically for men and doing like testosterone check and prostate check and all that stuff.
Dude, I would want to be just a client. Because like the other thing is I haven't been to the doctor in like 10 years. So yeah. It's like, I'd love to just go to the doctor.
Yeah, we need you around, Sean, man. We need your shit post.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'll.
You've become far more active on Twitter lately. Is that strategic or is it just people are now seeing your tweets?
Yeah, maybe I'm not shadow banned anymore. No, dude, I got on Twitter in 2020, maybe 2021. I mean, I haven't been on there for fucking very long. I just like didn't have a lot of friends to talk to. I was in like groups or whatever, but like they're so insular. And I'd be like, oh, I wanted to just meet more people. And people can talk shit about social friendships or the internet or whatever, but it's been awesome. I just go on there and you just say whatever you want. And the other thing is, like, I talk about this a lot. It's like, oh, I'm a total free agent. Like, I can't get fired. Like, I don't care what anybody says. No one can take away my income. It's like, I'm just going to fucking do whatever I want on the internet and try to be funny. So
that's an interesting conversation, because this was something that, as a longtime internet user, worried me, getting canceled and saying something that, you know, like, gets on the wrong side of the crowd or whatever. And then you have to either fall on your sword, apologize, or like dig in deeper, I feel like, is kind of the two strategies you go. And I was very fortunate that my business partner said, if someone cancels you for the things that you say and the way that you think, then that's okay, because I know who you are. I know what your intent is. I know, like, the type of person you are. And that was like a big relief, where I could just feel like I could be myself on social media. And I think that's an important part of social media, is being yourself and being true to yourself and saying what's on your mind, because a world is pretty uninteresting if everyone's just tweeting safe things.
Yeah. And I guess I'm lucky that I don't care about most non-e-commerce related things. Like, you can tell me about, like, anything about politics, or I don't know. Don't care. But, like, I am totally free to say that, like, which attribution software sucks, like, you know, which agencies to avoid. Like, I guess my hottest takes in the general scheme of things just aren't very spicy.
Well, I mean, I think they're definitely plenty spicy in the e-commerce space.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I'm lucky enough to have an intense passion for something so small. that is e-commerce.
You mentioned earlier on in our conversation that you think, what, 10 to 15% of the companies aren't going to make it through this time period. Is there anything that could fundamentally change that would help save these companies?
Interest rate cuts.
Okay. So they're just leveraged too much? Or is it there's not the capital flowing to be able to fund their next rounds?
So the 15% of brands that are going to shut down, a very small percentage of them are venture-backed, right? They will not get venture deals done. So, like, maybe it's 1% to 2% of overall, probably less, 1% of overall brands are venture-backed, and they will not be able to get funding because no one wants to do those deals. There's no good outcomes in the venture world in brands or whatever. The real problem, so what makes a company go out of business? It's debt. Like, nothing else will make you go out of business. Like, without debt, you can just scale down operations, you know, get rid of liabilities, and you can exist in some state forever, right? Like, if you had no debt and you're like, you know what? I don't have employees anymore. I don't have this fucking office. It's like, Beard Brand as an entity could exist. You got to pay fucking $100 a month for Shopify or whatever. It's like, it'll exist. But so many brands it's this calculation where, like, they don't fucking understand their metrics. They have way too much debt. They're sitting on bad inventory. They thought Q4 would save them. It didn't. And now, like, they have inventory people don't want. They don't have money for marketing to sell that inventory. And they have, you know, creditors knocking on the door being like, hey, we lent you this money. Like, specifically the neo lenders, right? Like, the non-traditional lenders, they're just going to start taking money out of your Shopify distributions. You know what I mean? Like, as a first line creditor, like, they'll get paid first. And then that actually pushes you into bankruptcy. Like, that's what does it, just owing people money. So that's like 15% of brands right now. If you're in that situation, like, don't feel bad. And, like, some guy was mad at me on Twitter for talking about a specific brand this happened to. And it's like, dude, I don't think going out of business makes you a bad person. Like, failing a business doesn't make you ethically wrong. It's like, fuck, it happens. it's like, that's gambling, dude. That's all entrepreneurship is. It's just gambling. Yeah. So anyway, if you're in that situation, don't feel bad about it. But if you don't know if you're in the situation, figure it out. Figure out, like, exactly how much capital you have, how much equity you have in your business, right? Versus all the debts and liabilities or whatever. And there's a good chance you might be bankrupt, right? Like, because the other thing is, like, people assign value to, like, the brand asset, right? And it's like, it's basically worthless. It's like, unless people are Googling you, unless you have, like, you know, a lot of heritage and history behind it, it's like, it's worthless. It's like, you know, it doesn't, like, okay, like, be like, no, we're like the leading yoga short or whatever. It's like, no, you're not. That's Lululemon. It's like, yeah, but we have a dedicated community. And you probably don't. You have an email list. You know, a lot of it is the lies you tell yourself to be an entrepreneur, being like, we're doing this, like we're special, we're different or whatever. But once you actually go into like a bankruptcy court, it's like, yeah, no, we're going to assign pennies to everything. And it ends up being a lot less.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I think it's me as someone who is averse to debt. I don't even know how people get it, how they sign up for it, like just credit card debt, I guess. And
well, so a lot of it is so,
line of credit.
Yeah, yeah. So Ridge also operates with zero debt. So we have no line of creditors or whatever, right? It's been very difficult to do that, but that's just the way we operate. We don't, like, in retrospect, I would have loved to raise venture money. I would have loved debt. I would have loved these things. We didn't have the knowledge or expertise to how to do it. So yeah. It's like we played on hard mode because we didn't know that there was a different way to do it. But yeah, it could be a blessing in disguise. But so where does this debt come from? It's like Clearco lending you money, or Wayflyer, or the 50 other e-commerce lenders that came out in the past couple of years when money was really cheap. And people were like, you know, there's Amazon lending you money. You get Facebook ad terms. You get all of these different things. And it all ends up being that it's like, oh, you have a huge fucking liability. And a big one is to fund inventory. That's mm-hmm. That's the trap everyone falls into. It's like, oh, I have to grow quickly, right? So it's like, I need money for inventory so I can get more inventory so I can sell it so revenue goes up. That just ends up being the circle where you end up getting more debt for more inventory. And it works when it works, but as soon as something breaks, like Facebook acquisition, or you have a bad Q4 or whatever, now you have a bunch of inventory and not the cash to sell it, and you have people asking for money. And that that pushes people into bankruptcy. It's like, it's happened to JCPenney, it's happened to Sears, it happens to everybody, and it's happened to a lot of e-commerce brands right now.
Yeah. Is there any advice in there for someone who's starting up? Obviously, don't take on debt is like a blanket statement, but how do you do that? Like, how do you build a $50 million, $100 million company, not leveraging capital from other people? Like, what are the key components you need to have to be successful and to grow a company without outside money?
Yeah. I mean, you're at like, get lucky. I mean, it's like very few people have done it, right? Ridge has been able to do it because, you know, I use this term debt. And when I say debt, I really mean like structured loans from banks that have recourse and covenants attached, right? There's a lot of technical terms in there, but the way we scaled is that we got payment terms from our suppliers, right? So our payment terms that were incredibly aggressive, like 180-day payment terms or 365-day payment terms. And, you know, it's really understanding who you can push and leverage, right? Like, we'll have a huge payment due to suppliers, and I'll just be like, I'm only going to pay you $100,000 a day. And they'll be like, no, you need to pay us all now. I'm like, okay, well, I already have all the goods. You've already shipped them. Do you want more of my orders? And I'm just telling you, I'm going to pay you $100,000 a day. So you got to figure it out, right? Because my business is more important than their business. And I want to be a good partner, right? Yeah. It sounds like I'm a
tailor. Yeah, I mean, to look out for your own business, you have to also make sure you have your supply chain ready. So you do need to make sure that they stay healthy and grow.
Right, right. But it's like, if there's an extinction event, I'm the little rat that's going to survive. I'm going into my hole, like, you guys can all be dinosaurs. You guys can all die, but I'm going to make sure I survive, right? So anyway, yeah, it's just, you know, I often describe when I'm negotiating with somebody, I'm like, oh, I'm a terrorist. I'm going to do whatever it takes to fucking win, right? So yeah, that's the way we did it, is we took the debt burden away from us, the risk away from our business and into, you know, suppliers or vendors or whatever else.
Along the same lines, what kind of product margins do you look for to be able to justify the ad spend and operating costs associated with it?
Yeah, I mean, you really... if you're trying to do e-commerce in 2023, you really should really be looking at like as close to 80% margins as possible. And like the more, the merrier, you know what I mean? It's really hard to get above that 80%. Like when you start getting 90% margins, you start looking like Louis Vuitton or something, you know what I mean? We have to sell a good for hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. But it's, I mean, I haven't talked about margin forever. I'll talk to somebody and they're like, hey, we have 60% margins. I'm like, yeah, that's the worst business I've ever heard of in my entire life. You can't do wholesale. You can't do anything, right?
Yeah. So how are people able to get that 80% margins?
Charge more.
Yeah.
That's like the most important thing. It's like, and I'm sure we've had this conversation on this podcast 3 years ago. I'm going to say it again. There's a buyer at every end of the spectrum. Someone buys Hanes t-shirts. Someone buys Buck Mason t-shirts that are $32. Someone buys James Purse t-shirts that are, you know, $125, and someone buys Bruno Cocelli t-shirts that are fucking $400. There's a buyer at every end of the spectrum. So it's like, it's really hard to compete against Hanes. There's a reason why they're a commodity good setting the floor price, right? Yeah. So it's like, try to compete with something with more margin, right?
Yeah. But along the same lines, that may cap your growth potential. And going back to like the beginning of the conversation is like very purposeful with the opportunities you're picking, right?
Dude, yeah. The other thing is, I think people are so dumb that like they think brands are like SaaS businesses. They're not. Like, you shouldn't, like, someone's like, dude, it's okay if you only double every year. It's like, only double? That's the dumbest thing I've ever, like, you're going to double every year? Dude, Google and Lululemon are founded in the same year, like 6 months away from each other. You know what I mean? Google is worth $1.2 trillion. Lululemon's worth $44 billion. It's like, Lululemon is the best success story of any brand in the past 20 years. There isn't a better brand in the past 20 years. Hermès is fucking 200 years old. So it's like Lululemon's the best brand that's ever done it in our generation that we've been alive. Took them just as long as Google to be worth less than 5% of what Google's worth. So it's like, no, you're not going to double every year. You're not Google. You're not building a SaaS product. You're building a brand, which has a different identity. Anyway, I can go on with this forever, but it's like, dude, brands should have down years. It's like, you're not building a fucking, you know,
hockey stick.
Yeah, it's not algorithmic. It's like, oh yeah, we're just gonna add these people. No, it's like, dude, Lululemon had down years. Like they closed stores. You know what I mean? They've done all these different type of things. It's like, it's way more organic. It's way more like a living, breathing thing, right? It's not a tech product. So anyway, I don't know when we talk about that, but I'll talk about that forever. It's that like people just need to be way more realistic about what they're trying to build. And it's like, because you ask if Fridge could be $100 billion company, it's like, no. If you're selling a physical good right now and you think you're going to be a $100 billion company, are you selling cars? Are you Tesla? It's like, no, you're not going to be. You have to look at the best success story. Lululemon, $44 billion in 20 years. It's like, if you get 1% of that success, you are crushing it. So it's like, just be realistic.
Yeah. I think that's pretty good insight and advice. And also, like, we talked about it before we hit record, is just, this year, 2022 specifically, was really challenging more from like an ego standpoint, these expectations, high expectations for what I feel a company can do. And then when it doesn't do that, you know, and how you kind of face that adversity, you seem like you can just like ramrod through everything. I don't get this vibe from you that like you get down on yourself. I would imagine that's not true. I would imagine you have moments where you have self-doubt or you don't feel like you're in the right direction. How do you make sure you're pointed and really like kind of feeling like the decisions I'm making are the ones that are going to move things forward?
Yeah, man. I mean, I tell people all the time, oh no, we're always going to win. We're going to do whatever it takes to win. I think a lot of people talk about that, but it's like, no. I mean, like if I have to,
where does that come from though? Is that just ingrained in you? Has that always been you?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, we went into 2022, you know, thinking we were going to grow 100% or whatever, right? It's like, this is what we're going to do. Like, we're going to push through, we're going to make it. We did not grow 100%, okay? It was a decent growth year, but it wasn't, we didn't double year over year. It's really hard to double once you start getting to bigger and bigger numbers. But when I realized we weren't going to double, it's like, okay, we're going to pivot. It's like, I don't care about being right or wrong, right? I don't care that like, what I said previously is not what we're going to do. What I care about is, we're going to win, right? And like the definition of winning can change, right? But it's like, we are going to do what's best for the business in every moment, right? So dude, 1 week I'll say something. The next week I'll be like, no, we're doing something totally different. I was stupid and dumb back then. I'll be the first to admit it. I have no ego when it comes to that, right? Yeah. But it's just, we will reach an end state to always, you know, win. And that's like, you know, part of the reason like putting the risk of inventory on suppliers, it's like, oh yeah, because I know debt can kill your business. So I'm not going to do that, right? It's like, and my business is special. Like that's what I say all the time. It's like, oh, I don't care about your thing at all. It's like my thing's precious and good and great and the best thing. And you don't deserve our revenue, our business or whatever. You have to fight for it or whatever. So yeah, I think it just comes from, I don't know, being an egomaniac or being insane or being a terrorist and being like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure we come out on top.
Yeah. And that was always there for you.
Yeah, I don't.
Did you play sports as a kid or?
No, man. You know, I think I guess I said this earlier in the podcast. I grew up in a very economically depressed area. And
did you feel like you weren't winning as a kid?
You know, as a kid, I was very independent. So like a single father who traveled for work, I would spend weeks if not straight up a month by myself, like making sure I got to school. Like, you know, I have an older brother, but you know, he was doing his own shit. So it's like very, very focused on independence.
How old were you at that time?
Oh, I was probably 10, 11, 12, really? Something like that. Yeah. And then at the same time, like literally growing up in an area in the middle of nowhere in the Pacific Northwest, when heroin was ripping through the city, and it's a small town, like 6,000 yeah. people or whatever. The schools had so many bigger issues to deal with than like attendance or work or whatever. Like in my hometown, there's a documentary I could tell you. There was a barn that so many kids died every year that they would paint the barn with their names on it. It was like they called it the Death Barn. And yeah, anyway, so like just a bunch of people from my high school, like just, it was really big. So anyway, it was an area where you could really do whatever you wanted, right? So I ended up going to an independent school, graduated like super early, was able to like move out at 16 and like being in an online college program because like the whole area was just dealing with like chaos.
Yeah. What about your brother? Did he fall into that trap or does he have the same kind of drive as you?
Well, my brother James lives in Austin, works at Ridge. So, okay. So yeah, he also went to independent school. He was also a very independent person.
How did you not get into drugs?
I did get into drugs when I was like 13 or 14.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Which made me get kicked out of school. So I had to go to independent school.
Yeah. Did you feel like you got addicted or was it more of just like weed and booze? And
yeah, it was like weed and booze and like pills got really big. But yeah, I guess I just got super lucky throughout that whole thing that I avoided opioids.
Yeah.
I think most problems in America today stem from the opioid crisis and people don't want to talk about it. Like homeless shit. Like entitlement, like whatever's going on. I think it's just like there was like a 10-year period from like I guess like 2004 to 2014 that like we've collectively don't talk about or whatever. Yeah. And it's like if you're on either side of the political aisle, any problem that you see, I think goes back to the opioid epidemic.
Do you think you just got lucky that it wasn't available to you, or did you purposely avoid taking those drugs?
I think I was really scared of injecting heroin.
Yeah.
I was like, I was smart enough to know that's not a good thing. But yeah, I mean, like when I was in like sixth grade, I was like fat and like basically like just a super nerd. I spent all my time reading Wikipedia or whatever. The first girl that was really nice to me, her name, I won't say on the podcast because she passed away when I was in like ninth grade from heroin. But anyway, man, seeing that and then growing up, like in a very like independent environment, I was like, oh, I can just do whatever. It's like any of the rules society paints don't exist. You can literally do whatever you want.
Yeah. So. Like you failed out of school. You went to a different school. You made it. You overcame.
Yeah.
You know, an environment of drugs
and just really be able to be like, oh, everything that's painted in front of you, all of the society rules, all of like whatever path, it's like, it's all bullshit. It's all just like somebody who's dumber than you or not as rich as you telling you what they think you're supposed to do or whatever. I remember the independent school principal was like the saddest guy ever. He was like in the Northwest, like his life sucks. His wife divorced him. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to be you. I don't want to take any advice from you, dude. So anyway,
that is a lesson. I had a phone call with my high school classmate literally yesterday talking about, it took me 10 years to unlearn that there wasn't this blueprint that I just follow. And he's, you know, my same age, 40, got like a PhD, did the whole like do what you're told kind of thing and you'll find success. And he's still struggling with that, battling it, trying to break it out. So if anyone's listening there, like, yeah, societal construct is that. It's just all made up and you can make the world be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, the earlier you learn that, the more successful you end up being, yeah. I think. I was just super lucky when I was like 14, 15, 16 and being like, oh shit, everyone here is super dumb and they don't understand what's going on. I'm like, oh, I don't be like any of these people. Now I'm 28 and I run a 9-figure business. So fuck all of that. I won.
All right. Where can people follow you? Where can they support you?
You know, I'm on Twitter, Sean Ecom. Check me out. I have a newsletter called...
Is that Ecom with one M or two M's?
Just one.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a newsletter called Unsponsored Ecom where I do not take sponsors. It's free. I'll just talk about whatever the fuck I want.
And you can tell it's from you. It's unedited. typos and spelling errors. Yeah, and everything.
Yeah. It's very unprofessional. But I it's so funny because people just shill stuff in e-com all the time. Yeah. It's like this software, this whatever. It's like, oh, because like those brands pay so much money. I got offered $8,000 a month to shill stuff. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to do it. I mean,
yeah.
literally, like, for me to sell my soul to start selling stuff, it really would need to be millions of dollars. Yeah. So anyway,
maybe one day. Well, no, yeah, if you start shilling stuff, you're
exactly.
All right, guys, this has been another e-commerce conversations. I hope you enjoyed it. Cheers.
Yeah, later. Bye.
Keep on growing.